My name is John Erling, and today's date is May 10th, 2023. So, Dr. Blackburn, would you state your full name, please?
Yes, Bob L. Blackburn, Jr. I am a junior. My dad was a senior, but I go by Bob Blackburn, or around the history circles, Dr. Bob.
Your birth date and your present age?
I was born September 10th, 1951 in Oklahoma City. Now I am 71, soon to be 72.
And where are we recording this interview?
We're recording this at the Oklahoma History Center in Oklahoma City. This is the headquarters flagship of the Oklahoma Historical Society.
And you may not like this, but I want to say this is the house that Bob built.
Thank you.
And we'll talk more about that later, of course. And before we proceed, I should say that I contacted you about 14 years ago when I started this project of oral history. And I have quoted you hundreds of times, because when I told you what I'm doing, you said, "You're doing our work for us." And with that, I gave me freedom. I wasn't a trained historian, but I knew that voices and stories needed to be recorded. And so I thank you for that inspiration you gave me when I started. It's hard to believe, 14 years ago.
Well, and you have far exceeded my expectations. You know, everyone wants to do a project. Everyone wants to write a book, do something. Very few people actually accomplish their dreams. You did. And the quality, I've watched so many of your episodes, and those memories are now part of the collections, with a capital T, the collections that historians can use in the future to understand the times that you and I have lived through.
Yeah. Where were you born?
I was born here in Oklahoma City. My families, though, are from Claremore, my dad's family, a long Claremore residence. My dad born there in 1920. Mom, Western Oklahoma, with Arkansas roots, from Chickasha, Nenecaw area. But dad was a highway patrolman. Mom was a teacher, and we were in Oklahoma City at the time I was born.
Your mother's name, maiden name and all.
Mom was Ida Mae Turley. She was born in Nenecaw, 1929. Granddad had come out to pick a cotton crop with a brother-in-law on 160 acres near Norridge, Oklahoma. And it was the only good year for cotton in the 1920s. He came out with at that time he had seven kids, one an infant, so six who could pick. Granddad sold a little bit of land in Arkansas, bought a Model T 25 pickup, took 3 days to get here from Howard County, Arkansas, just across the border from Broken Bow. Took 3 days to get here, and then he would spend all of his time, that load the cotton in the pickup, he'd go to the gin, wait to get it gin. By the time he got back, they'd have another load. And he spent days. And I have an exhibit here in the History Center about that cotton picking experience. And I always say, I am an Oklahoman because of cotton. And then Mom was born 4 years later.
Wow. Oh, that was your grandfather you were talking about.
That was my grandfather.
Right, right. And your mother, her personality and all, what kind of a person was she?
Well, Mom was the youngest of eight. By the time she was born, her oldest sister, my Aunt Agnes, Aggie Steelman, Duncan, Oklahoma, was out of the home already. So she was the baby, and she was a talented baby. She could sing. She was a pretty little girl, a beautiful woman, and she made a career in television with the beauty and the communication skills. But she was a singer from the earliest days, and so she always had the spotlight on her as a child, growing up even in poor, you know, small rural Oklahoma. But she had that very outgoing personality. She had a little bit of a wild streak in her. She liked men and dating. Married, my dad was a dashing highway patrolman, 10 years or 8 years older than her. But Mom had the energy, and I call them strong women. I've always been an admirer of strong women. I've advocated collecting stories of strong women and putting women in powers of authority. Generally, most things go better when women are in charge, I've noticed. And so I learned that from my mother, who had a strong personality at a time when women had that glass ceiling very low. She, with her talent and energy and ambition and ability, she was able to crack through that glass ceiling at a time when women were supposed to be teachers, secretaries, or housewives. That was about it in the 1940s and 1950s. And she said, no, divorce, raising two kids. She created a career by being her own producer of a television show, and was on air from 1958 to 1975. did over 3,000 live broadcasts representing this community. And she made $50 a week from the show, but she made her money by selling commercial time, by doing commercials. I was a child actor on the stage eating Kitty Clover potato chips. and then she would go to a beauty contest and be a judge and make a little bit of money. She would go to an opening of the world's largest truck stop in 1959 and be the celebrity on site. And making enough money to raise us kids, we moved in with an aunt into a little house with two women, one widowed, one divorced, and five kids. Best time of my childhood.
Wasn't the television show Romper Room, she was hostess of that?
That was the first. She was teaching at the time, did an open audition, and with her personality, at that time, there was no syndication through the airwaves, no satellites, of course, at the time, and it was expensive to send out film. The creator of Romper Room wanted a local hostess, educator. It was preschool. And Mom did this open invitation, went to Baltimore for 1 week training, came back, and KOCO started producing the Romper Room show with Miss Ida as that teacher. And it was a one-camera shoot in a little grocery store in what's now Britton, Oklahoma, because they could do 49% of their production outside of Enid. And she would, looking at the camera, teaching the kids, and she'd say, okay, now, these kids are drinking Borden chocolate milk. Mom, you need to go buy Borden's milk. And so selling that advertising. And she learned to be an entrepreneur through communication, much as you have done through radio through the years. She learned the medium of television and understood that was connecting talent and art and creativity with consumers, and that there was room for business in there. People would pay for airtime to sell their products. She said, well, this Borden milk is good for kids. I like to sell it. And that was her attitude, kind of the way I do history. History is good for people. Let's get out and sell it. You need to give me money. You need to give me your votes because I want to deliver this service to the people. And that's the way Mom approached the television industry.
We could say this is KOCO TV here in Oklahoma City. So she was obviously very charismatic, would be the word we put on her, obviously. And then in the magazine type format for many, many years, she did that as well, beyond Romper Room.
She did. She was out of work for a year. They moved Romper Room back to Enid because of FCC rules. She did not want to move to Enid. She was trying to keep her marriage alive at the time. Dad was a highway patrolman on Route 66, so he had to stay in Edmond. So for a year, she became a promotion person for Dennis Donuts. A local guy named Dennis started opening donut shops. And all of us baby boomers, of course, love donuts. I still do to this day when I indulge. But she promoted that. They bought her a 59 Chevy convertible that was black with a red boot. And she'd go from school to school getting kids to go donut. I was the actual elephant in front of the stores with one hand out the trunk doing this and one hand greeting the kids. But then she got back on television, largely because of leadership. Admiral John Kirkpatrick, businessman, oil man, philanthropist here in Oklahoma City, whose reputation is legendary, wanted a show that promoted his city. KOCO stands for K, was the call letter for every station west of the Mississippi by that time. But it was Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, KOCO. He wanted a show that promoted his community, would give free airtime to Lyric Theater, to Barton Theaters, to people putting together a fundraiser. Well, her show, a magazine format, allowed people to come onto the air to sell their services. Jody Miller, who passed away this last year, famous country and western music star, the first Grammy given to a woman was Jody Miller from Blanchard, Oklahoma. Her first appearance in front of an audience was on the Ida B Show. That started her career. There were other people like that who use that as an opportunity. Steve Ripley, a common friend that you and I have known and admired so much, Steve played on the Ida B Show when he was in a garage band here in Oklahoma City in the 1960s. Well, that was promoting Oklahoma City, and Mom had a talent for reaching it to someone and pulling their story out of them, like you do with radio in this series. She could engage people And she was just witty enough to keep it lively and to keep it moving, and stayed on that air for the 3,000 shows.
You were like 7, 8, 9 years old when you were helping your mother, weren't you?
I was.
You were introduced and on stage at a very early age.
And I hated it. I did not want to be in the spotlight. My dad was the youngest of 8, the brightest, the big athlete. And so I had superstars as parents who liked the spotlight, the center of attention. I was very willing to kind of stand to the sideline and watch these two amazing people. So when she wanted me on television, she had to just drag me into the shows and to eat the potato chips or whatever it might be. But I was learning about communication skills, and that was her skill set that served her so well in our family, of course. She knew how to sell. She knew how to engage people. And that salesmanship really came that I've used in history, selling history through my books, through the exhibits, through fundraising. I think a lot of that came from my mom, Ida B.
She started an advertising agency, didn't she?
She did. She married for a fourth time, eventually 5 times, and the last one lasted more than all the others together. Great guy, Bird Dog Rogers, a Cherokee Indian. But she got widowed. And with, I think it was number 4, if you count my dad twice. And he died, and she was not ready to retire to the lake in Puerto Vallarta, where they had a place. So she started an ad agency, and it was the first woman-owned advertising agency in the state. And she had a small staff. Her problem was she was a better communicator than a business person. She gave a lot of free time and comps to people. He said, "Well, I got a good cause. Would you help us with the children's center?" She wrote a jingle for the children's center. This is a place here in Oklahoma City. If you talk about Christianity, just embrace the Christian ethic. We have got to help these children who were born with no arms or could not see or could not speak or with some kind of problems. But these are human beings we've got to take care of. That's the Children's Center. She wrote a jingle for them and did a shirt. I still have it. It's a little pre-infant handprint on the shirt. But she never charged them a penny. That was her way to help. And so, of course, if you have overhead with staff and office space, you've got to feed the beast. She learned that she was not great at feeding the beast. She was better at the communication skills, but she had the firm and stuck with it for a number of years, probably longer than she should have, and continued doing promotion for different clients. And she'd take on a pet cause and just do her best. And then eventually her fifth husband, Bird Dog Rogers, an old cowboy, rodeo cowboy, athlete, became her project, and they were a good pair together.